Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, we got lots of things to talk about. Hope we get to talk to Peter Toler and maybe Chris Francis this morning, too, about, a good compromise, I think, is how they would describe it regarding trees. And we'll talk more about that in Mobile if they get a chance to call in this morning. But boy, there's lots of things to talk about with the freeze. Listen, a couple of thoughts for folks about the freezes. Some people's tomatoes have done very well. I got a great picture. Greg's tomatoes did very well. Looks like through this freeze, there was some advantages to getting these in the ground. When the temperature is hovering right around 30 or 31 or 32 degrees, usually even a sheet can help. Make sure the top of the sheet is closed off. It's better if it doesn't touch the tomato plant. And make a big tent with it so that it collects the heat of the ground. But let me just tell you something. As I said, as the climate changes, and as we get more warm days in winter, we're going to be tempted to plant those tomatoes earlier. It's probably not a bad idea. But one of the things that happens is that frost, the first frost and the last frost become more unpredictable. So we may have a very warm winter, but even if the frost occurs at the same time it usually occurs, because we've planted earlier or because things are growing faster, they're more vulnerable. So we have to think about winter protection a lot more as our winters get warmer. I know that's funny. It seems strange, but I promise you it's true. And this year is a classic case. When you plant your tomatoes, feel free. I think it's a great idea in most years in Mobile to plant your tomatoes the last week in February, the last 2 weeks in February, certainly the first week in March. But be prepared with good protection. That can be a styrofoam bucket that covers the tomato completely. It can be a good box with a blanket over it. Those are pretty good at protecting. Here is the ideal situation. Get a wall of water. For those of you who love tomatoes, get a wall of water. It is an amazing device. You could plant your tomatoes the 1st of February, and it would survive the frost. The ground temperatures may not be warm enough to justify it then, but a wall of water will protect those plants down to the lower 20s. It is absolutely amazing with no damage, and it can make a big difference for those of you. And I talk about this periodically, but now that you've seen some damage, don't get scared of planting your tomatoes early. Just get the right protection. A wall of water makes a ton of difference. A ton of difference. You may have to order it on the internet, but just look up wall of water. Wall of water for tomatoes. It makes a big difference. Makes it really easy to grow them. Goodness gracious, we got, look at this. Greg showed me how he did it. He's got boxes of all kind covering his plants. But it works. It really works. That can work. The wall of water works even better. It's really great. The loquat cultivars, want to talk a little bit more about those. Benjamin sent us some information about that. We'll talk a little bit more about those. Johnny, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I had a couple of questions for you. My onions, I planted them back in probably September or so, and they've been real nice all winter long. And they put on some fresh greens in this last month or so. But they always seem to get about this time here, and they start getting kind of weedy out there. There's a lot of weeds around them, and then they just kind of like die out. They don't really. What can I do possibly to spur those things on to get a little bigger instead of just being just a really small bulb on the bottom.
Yeah, so, Johnny, let me ask you, what variety did you grow?
I think it's just a white onion. So according to the package, it's supposed to get, you know, just like a grocery store-style onion, white. But
Here's the trick, Johnny, and let me try this for you. So here's the problem with onions. There are long season and short season onions. Most of the onions that come in packages from places like Home Depot and Walmart and that you get on the internet are probably designed for gardeners they're designed for gardeners up north.
Yeah.
We need short day onions down here in the south. And so I think it may be variety if it's not bulbing up.
Can you give me a variety name that I can
The Gran X hybrids, GRANEX, are the common ones that are grown commercially here, and they're pretty good. If you go to a place like Baker Creek heirloom onion, Baker Creek seeds, they're on the internet. They have a lot of long day and short day onions, but they'll tell you about the onions that are for southern latitudes like ours, and they have some great ones. They have a great red one and a great classic white one. I don't remember the name of them. I think they have a white Bermuda. Bermuda is a classic southern onion.
Okay, I think that answers my question.
Yeah, and I think that's your problem. That's why they're not bulbing up, is they're just not the right variety.
Yeah. Me and you have had this conversation. Now that you mentioned the short day, long day, we've had this conversation before.
Well,
I'm bringing it back up, but I just forgot, I guess.
It's okay. It's okay. So it's a really important thing. There aren't as – and, you know, in terms of what – seed catalogs are doing, they really go to town on the long day onions for Connecticut and that area, because that's where all their customers are. You know, they're all in New Jersey, they're all in Michigan, they're all in Ohio, and so you get lots and lots of varieties that are designed for that latitude. But for our latitude, where days in winter are longer but days in summer are shorter, we need short day onions. And that's how you do it. And so there it is.
Well, since I got you on the phone about the loquat,
yeah,
I got a couple of them from the botanical garden sale back in the fall, and I got those planted out a while back, and I was wondering about what they are, because both of them were planted exactly the same time. One of them seems to be leafing out and doing real nicely. The other one just kind of holding off on me for some reason. I was wondering, were those loquats? Were they a grafted tree, or are they?
No, they're not. They're not grafted. They're going to be seed run, as we like to say. They're going to be whatever. Each one is going to be different because it's grown directly from seed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that means the fruits each are going to be a little bit different. The growth rates are going to be a little bit different. One of the and Johnny, gosh, I don't know how much time we have to talk about this, but one of the great things with loquats is we need to find varieties that are well adapted for our area. And that means that the ones that have that flower at the right time for us, I think it's better if they flower in early November here. And so that the fruits have formed before the first frost, maybe even in October and November, because the fruits seem to be hardier than the flowers.
Right.
The flower damage is where we get most of the problem. Fruit hardiness is also important, and that's good to think about, but fruit size, ability to deal with heavy rainfall and moisture. A lot of the California varieties don't don't do that well. Fire blight resistance is important. So the point is, what we need to do is we need to select from these seedlings. Everybody's got loquat seedlings, and we need to go around and select the best ones for our area. We did that a while back with Martin Vander Yeesen. Gosh, it's been almost 20-something years ago. It's probably longer. That's scary. And we planted them out, but we need to do that again. We really need to reselect. So you may have one of those may turn to be really great loquats. So watch them and see what happens. Hey, Johnny, all right, it's always good to hear from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, you know, I have some questions. It's going to be very interesting. Very interesting after this freeze. I'm interested to see what happens to the loquats. I'm interested to see if that caused any damage to them. Usually the fruit are pretty hardy, and they could take these kinds of temperatures. Ooh, somebody, and just as if in reaction, Greg just sent me a picture of his loquats. They look really good. And I know it got reasonably cold down in Greg's yard, probably below freezing, I'm sure, because I know he had a little bit of bronzing on his tomatoes. So that's good to know. The loquats, fruits look like they're surviving. Somebody sent me a picture of the curl leaves on the satsumas. Let me just say, no, don't worry with those at all. That was damage from last summer. It was done by a leaf miner. Not a big deal at all. Won't even really hurt the plant at all. I am very curious, however, about citrus. And I think people may be calling me very soon to say, gosh, what happened to my citrus? I thought we were going to have a big citrus year. Well, I think some of those blooms may have gotten culled, trimmed, pruned by this cold. I hope that some of my blooms survive and produce fruits. It's going to be very interesting. I don't know about, that's going to be one to watch. That is definitely going to be one to watch. I'm very curious about it. Carol, I wanted to tell you, yes, go ahead and put your Meyer lemon in now. I think this is getting to be a good time to do it. I think you're perfectly safe. Go ahead and put the Meyer lemon in. You'll be good. You can transplant those bulbs, Carol, right now. That's right. If you have to, you have to bring plenty of soil with it. It can stress them to do it, to move them this time of year. It's better to let the foliage die back a little bit. But bring some soil, and that'll certainly help. That will certainly help. So Peter Toler's on. Peter Toler is the city arborist, but he's got another title exactly. I'm not sure what it is. Urban forester. So he's the guy who does the evaluations for trees in the city. And helps to run the urban forestry program. We had a little episode. Was it? I guess it was last week. Or week before. We talked about some of the issues that were developing around Beauregard and Broad Street in Mobile, and we talked about the tree program in general. And in order to do some street work, they were going to have to remove quite a number of trees. But we had a number of meetings. There was quite an outcry. Some of it probably good and smart. Some of it not so smart. But a lot of concern on both sides. I'm not sure that either side operated. I think there were legitimate concerns on both sides. Let me say that. Let's talk about what happened, Peter. You were at a meeting this week, and I know Chris Francis was as well. Tell me about what happened at that meeting.
We, first off, good morning. What we did is we sat down, showed the plans, showed them a map of what trees were to be removed, what trees were to be retained, what size those trees were. and talked about the project overall, talked about what renovations are going to take place on Broad Street. And then we let, I'll just call them the Government Street Contingency because I don't remember all the names that were represented. I know it was the majority of the historic districts downtown. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Peter.
Hey. No. And downtown, and they laid out their concerns about the trees, and we were able to find some compromise in it. I'm very proud of engineering, proud of the mayor, proud of everybody for reaching out a hand and kind of bridging the gap on this whole thing to where, first and foremost, everybody in the meeting room wanted to see the project go through. They just wanted to give our signature tree a chance to still shine in its glory along Broad Street. And I think we found some common ground.
Yeah, and so that's very good. There were some trees that had to be removed. You know, I know Chris. I talked to Chris Francis about it, and Chris went and looked at it very carefully. Chris is a private arborist who works in town and really gets involved in a lot of these issues. And Chris said, you know, if you were going to do some of those trees, literally you couldn't work around them. If you were going to do street improvements, if you were going to make it safe for bicyclists and pedestrians. You weren't going to be able to work around some of those trees. They just had to come out. Some of the trees Chris described as having some issues that would make them vulnerable and could come out. Some of the trees were perfectly healthy, and they had to come out too because they were in the way. But Chris also noted that there were some compromises where they did, in the end, find a way to work around some of those trees. Some of the replacement trees, I know that some of the replacement trees we had specified using other types of trees besides live oaks, and now they're going back with the replacement trees with the live oaks.
What we did, Bill, there was, as everybody that's been keeping up with this whole process, knows the proposed replacement oak was a nut all oak. Well, what we did throughout the whole corridor of the project, we looked to see where nut alls were proposed to go in, made sure there was enough green space for a live oak, and where there is adequate space, we did come back in with, we did propose for live oaks to be replaced there. It's also, I want everybody to know that we requested the biggest possible tree that could be planted to be put in that area so it would not be like a little twig sticking out of the ground. We were also able, I don't have the exact numbers, I'm going off memory, I think we were also able to retain 4 of the proposed live oaks that were to be removed. So it wound up being 4 retained. It's around 9 or 11 or something like that that are of species selection where it's nut alls that are going back to live oaks along the corridor.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Chris Francis is on too, and Chris overslept this morning, didn't you, Chris?
I was working on a project, and then it hit me. I said, oh, wait, I need to call into the radio show. Sorry, I'm late.
So listen, so as Chris Francis is on, Peter's on. Chris... Peter, thank you for because I think Peter just gave us a good view of this meeting. Chris, tell me your view of the meeting.
Yeah, so overall, I thought it was very productive. I thought it was respectful, considerate on all sides. And Peter's probably already gone over it, but you know when the meeting came together and the mayor's administration. It had already put together some proposals, you know, that really thought they would kind of satisfy the wants and the needs of, you know, of those who were kind of raising a stink. And so, you know, we knew we wanted to preserve more trees and we wanted to answer some, you know, we wanted some answers to some questions and they already had laid out. They said, hey, look, you know, we're planning on removing these trees, but we think we can save these because we can move this sidewalk over or move this curb over. And so they already had thought out, you know, some ways to kind of figure that out. And so, kudos to those guys. I think they really did a good job in there.
Yeah,
I walked out of there feeling really good about that meeting.
Bill, yeah. I want to lay out an important note that Chris laid out in the meeting to the entire group, and I agreed 100% with him. Chris also stated that there can be unseen. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're good.
All right, Chris also stated that there can be unseen issues with some trees when it comes to roadway projects and construction projects. And some of the trees that were to be retained could be at the last moment. You may have to make a decision to remove a tree based on an issue that you can't see above the ground.
That's right.
And that's a possibility that could occur that may, to the general public, appear to be some sort of sleight of hand or something. But I don't think that's the case. And I fully expect you'll run into some of those that you say, by the time that this sewage line gets redone here and the water line gets redone here and the road comes through here, there aren't any roots left. And so just because the trunk of the tree physically remains doesn't mean that tree is going to survive. And so there's going to be some decisions that have to be made in the field that may involve removing some additional trees that they're trying to retain. And you don't want that, but we have to know that that's coming. That's probably coming,
and that's good. And I'm glad we let people know about that. Hey, Peter, Chris, when we get a chance, but as we watch this project develop, if we see anything like that developing, let's try to be preemptive. Let's try to go out and look at this before it happens, so we can let the public know this is what's going to happen to this tree. And here's why. So we're going to have to take a break here. It's been a good discussion. I want to come back because I think there are some important things to think about that this episode brought out and that we really need to think about really hard. Now that this crisis is over, let's think about some things really hard. Before the next crisis, we'll be back. Hope you guys can hold on for just a second.
My Guguza, Guguza Bella. She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Guguza, I wanna be. 'Cause Guguza is so crazy over me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Listen, we've gone through a lot of things this morning. One of the things we went through, a discussion we've had, it was a good one, kind of a relief to hear. Peter Toler with the city, the urban forester for the city, and Chris Francis, our local arborist who we have on frequently because we really enjoy working with Chris, and he's really great on these issues and really takes an interest in the urban forest canopy beyond just his business, which is a good one, Chris Francis Tree Care. But Chris really takes an interest in these issues and how they apply to the whole city. We had an issue that we talked about previously where there were going to be some trees taken down on Beauregard and Broad. There was an outcry, a hue and a cry, as they say. There was a compromise as best we could. Some of those trees are still going to have to be taken out, but I think all the parties were pretty happy about that. Let me, I want to go back, Chris, and I want to say three things, and then I want you guys to argue with me because you're going to be in charge of executing this. I think it's great that I think the compromise is great, and I'm glad the city really worked on this, particularly with the existing trees. There was the plans that went in called for nut all oaks, which are great oak trees. I love nut all oaks. They're great native oaks. They're all in the Delta. They're a beautiful red oak. one of our great finest red oaks. They do very well in heavy, dense soils. They're going to do great in urban situations. But the idea, I think these nut all oaks were put in with the crazy idea that somehow they would take up less space than a live oak. Well, that ain't true. So, first off, let's just say when you put a tree out in a big situation like that, it's going to spread, it's going to wolf out, and it's going to take up a lot of space. And so there's no reason that a nut all oak would be narrower or take up less space than a live oak. I just don't think that's the case at all. And the second issue is that if we love live oaks, and I love live oaks, man, I love the look of our city canopy, we're going to have to start doing something besides planting live oaks all the time, everywhere. We're going to have breaks in that canopy because diseases are coming that are going to affect those live oaks. And once it gets into the canopy, if there are no breaks in this canopy, it's going to be impossible to control. We're going to have this disease spreading everywhere. So we need a break, and that break doesn't mean planting other red oaks, because red oaks are susceptible to the same diseases that affect live oaks. So we're going to have to be really smart. I don't know if we're capable of it, but we're going to have to know the difference between red oaks and live oaks and white oaks and the white oak group, and we're going to have to do that more often. So if we had a smart landscape architect who was doing this, and that landscape architect wanted to do something that was protective of trees, he would have included white oaks, trees from the white oak group, in here to serve as a break so that diseases don't spread. Or it would have used trees from other families, from other genuses, genera, that were not oaks, that would be there. And we've done that on many streets in the city. Elms could be used, lots of other trees could be used, and they would have a great presence like the live oaks. So we're going to have to get really smart about this, and I don't think we've gotten there yet. I think we're on good talking terms now, but I'm being the bad person here, so I'm asking y'all to now pet me on the head.
To be fair, the landscape architects have drawn in a number of other trees that are not oaks at all. And so they have a lot of different trees that they're proposing to come back. But one of the complaints, from some of the groups was that there are no live oaks being planned to come back in, and the only oaks that were planned to be planted were the nut all oaks. And, you know, not that they're opposed to the nut all oaks, you know, especially having some diversity, but the main thing that they really like about the live oak is that it offers that foliage in the winter when so much else is bare and stripped. And so it's part of what makes Mobile, that we've got this foliage, you know, it's green in the winter versus you go to just about anywhere else in America, probably say Florida, and, you know, it's brown, it's bare. And so they really wanted some, you know, some foliage there. But yeah, they do have some other trees that were drawn in. While it's fresh on my brain, I want to say that this meeting was a little over 2 hours long, and we went through every tree that was proposed for removal. They had pictures of the trees, measurements, why it was being removed. And some of these were, you know, they were in the middle of the road. You know, the road was coming through, the road was getting wider. Hey, we hate to see that tree go, but there's no way that you can jog traffic, you know, a hard, you know, 90, you know, S-curve all the way around a tree, and it probably wouldn't survive the construction anyway. But there were other trees that they just looked horrible. Now on paper, you know, it may say this is a 50 inch live oak and you think, oh my God, a 50 inch live oak. We hate to lose that. But when you see the picture, oh man, there's hardly anything left. It's a trunk and it's just a pile of dead branches and there's hardly any foliage on it at all. And even without diagnosing, you know, exactly what's wrong with it and what disease it may have or something, then most people would look at that and go, oh, that thing looks horrible. You know, that's yeah, sure, cut it down, no problem. And so I think that was the bulk of the trees, was that, you know, they were either in the middle of construction or they were really rough looking, you know, to begin with. And so, and most of those are just stress from their environment and from previous infrastructure damage and compaction and, you know, all the problems that you're going to have with urban trees. But there are some still.
Fellas, if I can interrupt you just for a second, I also want to tell you we have a listener named David on from California who is very eager to join your tree discussion.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Yeah, morning. Yeah, we got done a little while ago, sunny day in San Francisco. Hey, you know, I was listening with interest. The person that was speaking last was talking about, you know, even though it's an old tree, it's ugly, even though it's 50 inches. Well, I think the oldest tree here in California is it's up near Yosemite, and if I remember right, it's called Old Granddad, or maybe it's Old Grandpa, and it is, if you walk up to it, it's they don't have any roads that'll go up to it. You gotta hike to get in there, and that thing is so rotten in the center that you can walk in from three directions into the, this is like an old redwood, right? It might be a sequoia, and it's you can walk into the trunk, you know, just like the old things where you could drive through it. You can walk through it, and it's been through so many fires through the centuries that it's hollow in the inside, but it's still alive, and it's trying to think if it's like 300 years old or older than that. I not for one would be interested in chopping that one down.
Yeah, the difference is, of course, can I interrupt there? Because there is a big difference between California and Mobile, and one of those differences is tropical storms and hurricanes. I think the sequoias don't have to deal with that. We actually have planted out redwoods and sequoias here that tend to get topped out pretty frequently by these really high winds. So very different conditions and very different things that operate. Also, rots tend to be more well-developed here. So I'm not sure, and I would certainly not, certainly those sequoias last a long time. They're in a very dry area, actually, where there is, where rot tends to spread very slowly. And the live wood on those sequoias can be very strong and can support a tree. If you had an oak tree with that much rot, we've seen it happen a lot, it will... they can really fall. So it's, I think the comparison between California and Mobile may not be a good one. And sometimes the rot in Mobile can lead to real severe architectural damage. I would say that most of the damage we get from hurricanes comes from trees that have hidden problems that we don't address.
Bill, to add a note in that, we had a straight line wind. It occurred about 2 years ago, and it was a 15-minute weather event. We had a total of 47 trees across the road in just that length of time. So, one little small burp from nature can really throw some trees on the ground over here.
Yeah, yep. And so it's, these are things we have to think about. In the road, the only thing it will do is will be impede your way to work. And of course, you don't care about that, do you? You don't care about being late to work. You don't care about being stuck in traffic. But when these trees are next to houses and other things, they can do real damage. So we want to be very careful about that.
Bill, Chris, and I, we actually both examined a tree in Washington Square that tipped over. And what was interesting, the roots never went under the road. They went left and right. And just eventually the tree laid over. Remember that, Chris?
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, what that gentleman was talking about is more of an internal, structural concern. And especially, you know, if you have to hike to get to it, my guess is there's not a lot of targets around, so even if you did experience a structural failure, then, you know, it would just be a mess in the woods. It wouldn't smash anything.
Right.
Well, and those trees have lasted a long time with a lot of hollow in them, and that's something special about sequoias. It's also something special about that climate, and I would not transfer that. That's such a very different climate, and actually I live there long enough to know that it is a very different climate than the one we have.
Yeah, I think it's just a totally different issue than what we're dealing with in this construction project here.
Yeah.
Because, Bill, four of the proposed larger trees that to come down are right next to Greer's. And also, I think it's important to tell everybody the scope of this project. It goes from Beauregard all the way down Broad Street to right at roughly Canal Street. So that's the length of the project.
Yep. Hey, guys, it's been good. We're going to have to come back and talk more about this, but it's been good to have you today. Thank you. Chris, thank you for letting me interrupt the morning. Get back to work.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Bill, we'll talk soon.
All right, great.
I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw. And one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot. Then I rode away on the Tennessee Stud. The Tennessee Stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee Stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Sunday Morning with Plain Gardening. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the frost damage. We've been talking about it. Greg showed me how he covered his up. He's got plastic boxes and cardboard boxes all around. And, you know, the tomatoes look okay. There's some bronzing. That's some signs of damage. They'll probably grow out of it. And that's okay. 28 degrees was what he recorded at his house. And what I think that tells me is that just even the most primitive form, and Greg, excuse me for calling it primitive, but I suggested it too, is the boxes can help tremendously. At 28 degrees, those tomatoes should be gone. I mean, they should be blasted. They should be nuclearized at this point. But, you know, a box made all the difference. And so with a little bit more effort, you could really protect them down to low temperatures. And we should talk more about that. I'll be interested in hearing more about damage. I think we'll be seeing a little bit more as time goes on to things that didn't get covered because it got pretty cold. It's pretty bad cold spell for this time of year. Benjamin said his new leaves took damage. So there it is. So Jim, what are you seeing? Tell me what you're seeing.
Well, I didn't really see much damage at all. The blueberries
really?
Were what I was worried about the most because they were covered in blooms.
Yeah.
And they're still covered in blooms and the bumblebees are still loving them. So I'm happy about that.
And blueberries are very hardy.
The garlic took a little bit of damage. It had some brown leaves on it.
Yeah, it'll come right on through, though. It'll be fine. It's just the fact that it had gotten used to it being warm and it was all had a lot of growth, but it'll come on through. Blueberries
are
great.
We actually got down to about, 29 degrees on Monday night, 28 on Tuesday night, and 35 on Wednesday night. So,
So that's, that can make a big difference. I don't know what, you know, I'm not sure exactly now what the temperature was in my yard. I hope that we're able to minimize the damage. It's the crazy stuff that was getting damaged. The citrus, I think we probably lost some blooms. How do your citrus trees look, Jim?
I didn't have any blooms out yet. They're all still in bud form. So I think they're going to be just fine.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So that's really nice. So maybe our citrus crops are going to be okay.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
On the azaleas, it's been about we've lived here for a little over 15 years, and I plan on knocking all of them down to the ground because they haven't, since we've been here, been knocked to the ground. The best time to do that is just after they bloom, correct?
The very best time to do it is just before they bloom. But you're fine. Yeah, that's right. If you're going to knock them to the ground. The only reason that we say prune your citrus after they're finished blooming is so that you don't lose the blooms that year. But heavy pruning on a citrus is best done in as early as possible in the spring.
I'm not talking citrus. I'm talking azaleas.
I'm sorry, on azaleas.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay.
And the best time to do it is as early as possible. The best time to prune citrus, as I like to say, is never at all.
Never.
But
I agree 100%.
Right. So, the best time for azaleas is as early in spring as possible. In the past,
right,
people were pruning. So we came up with a little rule. Wait till after they bloom to prune your azaleas, because people would go in and prune their azaleas in after July. Between July and December, and then they wouldn't have any blooms because they had pruned all the buds off. So
right,
we said, prune your azaleas right after they bloom. That was sort of the early rule for people who just didn't have a lot of time to think about how to prune correctly, and that sort of helped. But if you want to prune them to the ground, which you need to do periodically to stop diseases, and I don't know that you have to do them all at once, but you know, you could prune them to the ground. Do it now. You're fine. Or do it after they bloom. But as early in spring as possible is when you want to prune them to the ground.
Okay. I did a couple last year, and they've already got blooms on them. And they're about,
that's right,
I don't know, 5 foot tall.
They'll recover very quickly, very rapidly.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm hoping these ones that I'm thinking about now are going to do the same thing. There's just so much stuff up inside them that I can't get to it.
That's right. And so it's just and getting, that's right, it's a great time to get those other things pruned out. And so, yeah, you're doing the right thing. It'll be fine if you want to wait till after they bloom. If you want to do
they're
now.
They're about in full bloom now, so, you know.
Yep. Just wait and enjoy the blooms, and then as soon as they're through, you go ahead and prune them to the ground.
That sounds like a good idea, Bill. I'm glad nothing really got hurt by that freeze, because it got pretty cold out here this last week. The mulberry tree got hurt a little bit. Like the closer the tree it was, the better it was. The thing, the branches that were far out are the ones that actually lost stuff.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Jim, it's good to hear from you, and thanks for the frost update. Let me also tell folks, Jim is pruning back his azaleas for a good reason. After they reach a certain size, it can be hard to control the weeds that are inside of them, the vines that are inside of them, and some of the trunks will begin to develop a funk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of it, but it tends to kill the trunk back. If you prune those back to the ground about once every 15 years, that's a good number, 15 years. About once every 15 years, prune those back. But don't do it every year. If you did it every year, you'd destroy your azaleas, and that's not what Jim's talking about. So I want to clarify that. But
exactly,
we prune them to the ground, and then they recover, as Jim says, 5 feet, 6 feet in 1 year, basically, is they're going to grow back very fast. So don't expect it as a way to control the height. It's just a way of getting rid of some of the weeds that grow inside of them and to improve the look of the plant in the long term.
Exactly.
Jim,
thanks,
good to hear from
it.
You. Yep. Boy, I suspect we got other callers, but we're going to have to. We're running out of time this morning because we had lots to talk about. We're going to come up on break. Hey, listen, folks, don't forget the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale. It's coming up this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This is a sale that's really designed for you. It's designed so you can have available to you plants that grow really well in our climate. There's some great citrus. I'm excited about it. There's some great camellias, great azaleas I saw on the list. So check that out. Don't forget, this week, the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale. See you next week.
Sugar magnolia, blossoms blooming, that's all empty and I don't care.
So my baby down by the river,
who should have to go?